as Shane said, we are usually, you know, about the place. You may have seen us before, but not usually in this space. So this is new for us. But we are so excited, and we count it a real privilege to share with you this evening. I'm Lauren. This is Ellie over here, and this is Sarah. Yeah, and we're excited. I want to begin tonight by praying. If you guys have your Bibles, you can start getting them to James 5 because we're heading in there together. But I just wanted, I loved that time of worship that we had earlier. And just that line, you have called us deeper and higher. And I think that's a good thought to start with tonight for all of us. We have all been called deeper and higher from where we are right now. We are moving forward. And so no matter where you are on your journey, we welcome you here tonight. Please buckle in and get ready for a great night. But just with that thought, God has called us onto deeper, higher, better things always. Yeah, I just want to head in tonight with that thought. Thank you, Craig, for that song. Bow your heads if you would, and we'll pray. God, we just want to thank you for being with us this evening. We know that you're here in this gathering. You're in our midst. And Lord, we just thank you for that. We thank you for your word that is powerful and full of truth, that is life-changing and profound. And so, God, tonight as we dig into it together, I pray that you will shape us, you will change us, and that we will leave moved to better and bigger, deeper, higher things. And Lord, be with us. May your peace and your presence be in this room tonight. In Jesus' mighty name, amen. I closed my eyes and the podium disappeared. That's awesome. Here you go, Sam.
Thanks, La. Hi, everyone. How are you tonight? Good, good. It's good to be here with you. Well, this week in our journals, we've continued on looking at the book of James, and we're coming towards the end now. And I don't know about you, James has got to be my absolute favourite book. He keeps it so real. He keeps it super practical, and there's so much goodness in there. So I'd love to begin by just reading the passage we're going to share from tonight. It is James 5, 7 to 14. It's going to be on the screen, which is handy for you, and we're reading it from the Message version. Meanwhile, friends, wait patiently for the master's arrival. You see farmers do this all the time, waiting for their valuable crops to mature, patiently letting the rain do its slow but sure work. Be patient like that. Stay steady and strong. The master could arrive at any time. Friends, don't complain about each other. A far greater complaint could be lodged against you, you know. The judge is standing just around the corner. Take the old prophets as your mentors. They put up with anything, went through everything and never once quit, all the time honouring God. What a gift life is to those who stay the course. You've heard, of course, of Job's staying power, and you know how God brought it all together for him at the end. That's because God cares right down to the last detail. And since you know that he cares, let your language show it. Don't add words like, I swear to God, to your own words. Don't show your impatience by concocting oaths to hurry up God. Just say yes or no. Just say what is true. That way, your language can't be used against you. Are you hurting? Pray. Do you feel great? Sing. Are you sick? Call the church leaders together to pray and anoint you with oil in the name of the Father. It's good, hey? So good. There is some variation in versions we found looking into this passage this week. And I'd love to read verses 7 and 8 again from the New Living Translation. And then my girl Ellie is going to come and kick things off. So, dear brothers and sisters, be patient as you wait for the Lord's return. Consider the farmers who patiently wait for the rains in the fall and in the spring. They eagerly look for the valuable harvest to ripen. You too must be patient. Take courage, for the coming of the Lord is near.
Have you ever watched a child plant a seed? A child will take a seed right out of the piece of fruit that they've just eaten. And they'll take it outside and they'll plant it. And I've noticed that when they choose where to put it, they don't decide based on where the seed is going to grow best. I think what their decision-making process is how can I get to this easiest later? So I've had seeds planted right outside our front door. Lauren has had seeds planted in the middle of her lawn all over the place so they can reach them. So the child will go with whatever is handy. Maybe it's a shovel, maybe it's a spoon, maybe it's their fingers, and they'll dig a hole and pop that seed into it. Where's your home? They'll cover it over with a little bit of dirt. They'll give it some water, and then they sit down and they watch it. And I have seen the beautiful faith of a child that knows if they sit long enough and watch this plant, and this time is measured in minutes, they will be able to see it grow and flourish and ultimately bear fruit today. And we say to our children, honey, you're going to have to wait. This is going to take some time. You have to go to school. You have to go to bed. There are chores to be done. There is fun to be had. And after what seems like a really long time, I promise we will see your plant grow. And I found that that is kind of the same message that James has for us, that we are all waiting. We're all waiting for the master to return. And as we wait, we're kind of going along with our lives. And as we go along with our lives, we find that we're actually waiting for all sorts of different things. Maybe you're waiting today for a year of schooling to be finally finished. Maybe you're waiting for your spouse to be found. Maybe it's for children or that perfect job. Or maybe you're waiting for retirement. I just had a thought that probably most of you aren't. And it made me lose my place. It's here somewhere. We don't get away from waiting. None of us do. But the question is, how will you be waiting? In the NIV version, it tells us, be patient and stand firm. Will you be found waiting well?
Thanks. Thank you, Ellie. Will you be found waiting well? So I have three daughters. They're awesome. I love my girls. I'm very lucky. And this one up here, this is Florence. She is three. And she's one of the coolest people that I know, just out of all people, not just kids. She's awesome. She is full of life and energy and super fun to be around, quite exhausting, but super fun. However, she is not at all really what I would say patient. Patience is not one of her strong points. She's learning, but not yet. Okay, so this last Christmas, Florence was two, and it's kind of the first year. When kids get to about that age, they start to really understand how fun Christmas is. Before that, they kind of are like confused why people keep giving them presents and, you know, just it's a bit full on. But when they get to about two, they get super duper excited about it. And this Christmas, last Christmas just gone, she was so pumped, loved it, had the best time, like fully got into it. But then Christmas was over. And that hit her hard, hit her really hard. I mean, it hits us all a bit hard, but hit her particularly hard. She was like, what happened to Christmas? We were onto a good thing. Like, where did it go? Suddenly it's over. What? Why? So good. Anyway, a week or so after Christmas, after we've kind of just been like getting on with life, probably. I was going to say after we've packed up the tree, but I don't think we're that quick in packing up the tree. It takes a little bit longer than a week. But she comes to me and she says, Mum, when's it going to be Christmas again? And I say, Bubba, it's going to be a year away. Now, I don't know if any of you have ever had the experience of trying to explain time to a toddler, but it's hilarious. It's also quite frustrating. They don't have the experience of years to wrap their head around that sort of concept of time yet. So the conversation goes round and round and it's kind of frustrating. She asked me, how long is a year? So bearing in mind that for Florence being, you know, a long time for her is being buckled into her car seat to drive the 10 minutes from our house to grandma's house. That feels like forever to her. So trying to wrap her head around a year is difficult. So I keep distracting her basically and we get on with life. A couple of months go by and she keeps mentioning Christmas and I keep attempting to give her some idea of the scale of time, but ultimately she can't wrap her head around it yet. So I just go back to saying to her, Florence, Christmas is coming. I am 100% sure Christmas will come again. It will be coming and it will be good. Florence can't see any evidence of it. So I'm asking her basically to trust in my goodness, to trust me, to believe and be okay with knowing that it will come again. I said it will come again. It will come again, and it will be good. Meanwhile, behind the scenes, I am preparing. I love Christmas. Maybe she gets that from me, I don't know. But I love giving gifts as well. So already I'm thinking about, you know, the kids, what they might like for Christmas next year. And anyway, this last week we're in the shops and Florence notices Starlight Adventure Barbie. and it's awesome. It has this cool feature where you press here. And she goes, yahoo! And her hoverboard lights up. And like to a three-year-old, yeah, that's good. In fact, she was in the service this morning and she saw me hold it up and she was like, oh, that's my Barbie. She'd seen it in the shops and now she's seeing it here. Anyway, there was some tantrums after church. But I've purchased this without her knowing, obviously, until today. And I'm preparing already for her. I've got this beautiful wrapping and I'm thinking about how awesome it's going to be. And when she asked me for it in the shop, I'm like, I love that she loves it. And I can honestly say to her, the time is not right, but the time is coming. So we've purchased it, we've wrapped it, and we've put it away. Just this last week, she asked me again, but it was more exasperated and annoyed this time, really. She was like, Mama, will Christmas ever really come? And I'm thinking, oh my goodness, it's only May, it's going to be a long wait. Little does she know, Christmas is coming. How often are we like that when we think about Jesus returning? His word repeatedly tells us that he is coming soon. But do we try and wrap our heads around this timescale that we can't ultimately grab? We can't nail it down. And so we begin to lose trust and focus. Do we forget that God is working behind the scenes in the spiritual realm and what he's working on is big and it's awesome and it's victorious? We get small-minded, don't we? When we look at the reminders in James, it's ultimately about living in a way that is mindful of Christ's return, to be excited and to be focused and to be ready all of the time in every season, whether it's patience or perseverance, in every season we are to be ready. Do you believe that the Master is coming back? Man, that really hit us this week. I honestly forget to think about that, forget to think about him coming back. I'm so much like Florence in lots of ways. We look alike, but I'm a lot like her, and we all can be like that. We get so focused and so impatient that we forget. We just keep plowing away at the things that we're doing, often good things, even things that God's called us to, but we forget to lift our eyes and shift our focus. We were talking this week about this and how thinking about God coming back is like having a new lens to look through. When we look at life through this lens of him returning, of him being a good, good, loving Father who is preparing for us, it changes everything. It changes the way we look at our lives. It changes the perspective on our things that we're waiting for. I believe that the challenge comes from that idea. If I believe that God is who he says he is, and if I believe he is indeed coming back, then it changes everything. I'm not just biding my time, but I'm devoted to working out the things that he has set before me and shifting my focus higher. And in the details, that's actually quite hard, yeah? Give me a nod if you think that's hard. I think it's hard. But it's so beautiful when you see somebody doing it well. I don't know if you've seen people who are living life beautifully with their eyes heavenward. They're thinking further and their goals are bigger and their mindset is bigger. It's awesome and beautiful, but it's also hard. So I think it's worth asking the question this evening of all of us. If people are watching the way that I live, could they actually tell that I am intentional about the things of God's kingdom? Are we living, loving, working, serving, caring, giving in a way that matters eternally?
James 5:10-11, and I'm reading it from the Message again. Take the old prophets as your mentors. They put up with anything, went through everything, and never once quit, all the time honoring God. What a gift life is to those who stay the course. You've heard, of course, of Job's staying power, and you know how God brought it all together for him at the end. That's because God cares, cares right down to the last detail.
Sometimes seasons of waiting require endurance and perseverance. And unlike these seasons that Ellie and Lauren have just described, when you're waiting for something pretty specifically and you're trying to wait well, but in the meantime, life just has to roll on as normal. But these seasons of endurance and perseverance completely consume us. Like, it's hard to see anything else but the circumstance that we're in. And if you're in that season right now, you're like, oh yeah, I know what you're talking about. Like, we know when we're in these seasons, right? They're painful. There's nothing pretty about them. They're gritty. And they're seasons that you kind of just have to buckle in and hold on until it's over. However, these seasons we face of hardship and pain are completely necessary. They're essential to us growing and finding out who we are and finding out who our master is and who we are in him. I love children's books, and they're one of my favorite things to collect. And, you know, I love sharing them with my kids and the kids that I get to teach in at school. And I think of that book, We're Going on a Bear Hunt. Most of you know that book. For those of you who don't know it, it's about this family who are going out on this adventure for the day, and they know exactly what they want to find. They're going to find a bear. And so there's this chorus that runs over, we're going on a bear hunt, we're going to catch a big one, we're not scared, what a beautiful day. What this family don't know is that there are challenges ahead. You know, it's not smooth sailing. There are dark forests and there are muddy rivers and there are snowstorms. And they can't go over them and they can't go under them. They've got to go through them. Right. And us too. You know, John in his book assures us in this life you will face trials. You're going to have troubles. We are guaranteed to face challenges and to come up against tough stuff. And the only option is to walk straight through it. Maybe the stance that we take is more of a stumble. Maybe it's more like a crawl for dear life, but we've got to face it head on. I also love coffee. And I didn't always love coffee, but when I met my now husband, Greg, and we started dating, he said to me, you know, like, for this thing to work between us, you're going to need to learn to love coffee as much as I love coffee. And the love was strong. And I did. I learned to love coffee. And now I can genuinely say I wake up in the morning and it's like, where's that coffee? Where's that coffee to set me in good stead for the day? I hope I'm not the only one that reliant on coffee. But I know that you're not all into it. Not everybody in this room loves coffee, but I'm going to ask you to stay with me because we, metaphorically speaking, all want that delicious cup of warm, satisfying coffee. But there is a process that we have got to go through first. First, these coffee beans over here, which have been picked and they've been stored and then they've been roasted to perfection. These beans have to undergo the grinding process. It's a breaking down process. It's brutal. It's hard. No little beans can escape that grinder. They're doomed. It's relentless. It can be noisy and it can feel like it goes on and on and on. When the grinding process is over, it's kind of unsatisfying because you don't have a cup of coffee yet. You actually just have like this dry, bitter pile of grind. And if you tasted that grind now, it would taste awful. But there's something happening. There is another step in the process. And if the grinding was hard, this next process is possibly harder because now this aggregate that we've ground up must undergo the process of extraction. And for this grind to be extracted, we've got to expose it to boiling water. It's hot and there's pressure required. The boiling water is poured over and over again, and then there's a wait. But slowly, something starts to happen. We sense that the end is nearing because we can smell that beautiful aroma. Or we can. Lauren, it's good? Yeah. Oh, you're getting it. Good, I'm glad. That beautiful smell comes, and slowly we can see that beautiful substance emerge. The grit is left behind, and we find ourselves with a flavorsome and satisfying coffee. Was the process worth it? Well, the world may tell you, no, not worth it, not necessary, a waste of time. It can totally be skipped. Lauren is here, and she's looking at Ellie drinking this delicious coffee, and she thinks to herself, I want that. But is Lauren willing to undergo the process? Nah, she would rather hit the plaza. She's got shopping to do. So she's found another option, an option that doesn't require grinding or extracting or waiting. She's found herself a Nescafe Blend 43. And this little dream here can be made in less than a minute. And it goes, bit of water. And this has been my favorite thing. And now Lauren's going to try it and she's going to tell us how it tastes. I wonder if the same reward is there. I wonder if you can relate to this metaphor. I certainly can. As an insecure girl growing up in this small country town, a pretty Christian community, I used to look up at these women around me, these strong and confident, brave women that lived these big lives for God. And I wanted to be like them. But what I didn't know is that for these women, to get to this point, they'd had to go through a process and a journey also. And it hadn't been easy. And you know, not many of you probably know my story, but in my late teens, early 20s, I found myself in the grind, in the heat, in the extraction. It felt like that beautiful shot of coffee took a jolly long time to seep through. It was a series of events that took place one after the other. My parents, they divorced, and it was a shock to me. I didn't really see it coming, and, you know, it was tough to walk through, as divorces are. My dad, not long after that, he had a nervous breakdown, and, you know, I was his only girl, and he was pretty reliant on me, and that was an emotionally taxing time for me as a teenager. I lost a really close friend. And I landed myself in a relationship which started out okay, but turned into a really unhealthy, controlling, and somewhat abusive relationship in which I felt like there was no real escape. This relationship lasted a long time, and when it did, it ended awfully. It left me feeling betrayed and worthless, pretty lost and depressed. I questioned God, I questioned His power, and I questioned His plan for my life. Now, I'm completely aware that my experience doesn't even begin to compare to that which Job endured in that passage we read earlier, but the grind was real for me, and the boiling water, it was hot. When I was in the thick of it, I didn't feel like I was ever going to emerge out of it. But like God did for Job, God also brought things together for me in the end, and these hard times did pass. Now, with perspective, I count myself so fortunate to have walked through that. I look back on that season now, and I see how much I grew in that time, and I see how much I was stretched. I see how much I learned about God and His love for me. I look back and I see His goodness to me. I see His faithfulness to me. And like that coffee dripping through the grind, I see the way that God refined me in many ways in that season. And I kind of now get that these stages of life, these seasons are essential. They're so important to becoming all that God has designed us to be. They're actually a gift. If you had told me at 20 years old that what I was going through was a gift, I don't feel like I would have reacted overly kindly to you. But Peter 1:6 tells us that the trial of our faith is worth more than gold. Those days that when our flesh feels weak and it is tough and our faith is tested, they're precious days. And I know that's not it for me. You know, that season ended, but I know that a time of grinding is going to come again. Another season that requires perseverance. But I hope that next time I'm going to be more ready for it. And I hope I'm going to see it differently. I hope I'm going to tackle it differently. Because the last thing our Master wants us to do when we find ourselves in those seasons requiring endurance and perseverance is to retreat until the season is over, to crawl into a ball and just hope it's over soon. Waiting well is not passive and it is not weak. James is so clear about the stance we're to take. He says to stand firm. He says to strengthen our hearts. And actually, it's like it's game on. And James actually gives us an action plan.
So here we are, we're waiting. And whether it's that patient sort of hope-filled waiting that just requires living in the meantime, or whether it's the perseverance sort of put one foot in front of the other until you're through it waiting, there are choices that we have to make in the middle of it. And one of the big ones is, what will you do with your words? James is pretty clear, and he gives us some good practical examples of what things not to do and things to do. He says, don't grumble. Do not complain about one another. I know that sometimes it's easier to look at what someone else is doing and complain about that instead of looking at our own actions and changing our actions. But remember what Matthew and Luke told us in the Gospels when they said, first, remove the plank out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. James tells us something pretty similar here when he says, friends, don't complain about one another. An even greater complaint could be lodged against you, you know. Ryan talked to us just last week about taming our tongues. Out of the same mouth comes praise and cursing. My brothers and sisters, this should not be. So don't talk negative. No curses, no grumbling and complaining about the people around you. Sounds easy enough. It never is. Then in verse 12, James says this to us. And since you know that he cares, let your language show it. Don't add words like, I swear to God, to your own words. Don't show your impatience by concocting oaths to hurry up God. Just say yes or no. Just say what is true. That way, your language can't be used against you. Don't feel like you need to give extra weight to your words. If you always tell the truth, then you won't need to ever say, oh, wait, actually, this time what I'm saying is true. You will be believed because it's always true. And then he takes it one step further. It's not just about don't. Don't grumble, don't complain, don't add extra things to your words. He says do. He gives us some ways to use our words positively. From the NIV version, he says, is any among you in trouble? Then let them pray. Is anyone happy? Let them sing songs of praise. Is anyone among you sick? Let them call the elders of the church to pray over them and anoint them with oil in the name of the Lord. They're amazing, strong ways to use the power of our tongue. Pray, praise, call. You can do it.
In these stories and examples, we hope that you see this challenge to live well, to actively work at it. Like Sarah said, it is game on for real. It's so clear in this passage this morning that one of the reasons for this is because the Master is watching. It says it a couple of times. Now, sometimes when I read parts of the Bible that remind us that God is close and that he's watching and that we will be judged, I almost have imagined him as a different guy. So I have this beautiful, strong, loving, fatherly Jesus that I praise and worship and run to when I'm afraid and talk to every day. And then when I read bits of the Bible like this, I almost have this like completely different image in my head of this scary judgy guy, this old guy that I was to be afraid of. And it's absolutely right that we should be aware and have a healthy fear and reverence for his righteousness. But I've been thinking this week about how he is this loving heavenly father who cares for his kids, a good master, a trustworthy source, but at the same time, he is this righteous and holy guy. So he is this whole person. And the Bible describes God, his character, as he is love, he is goodness. Recently, my kids had their school cross country, and I have, like I said, three little girls. I talked about Florence before, but the older two had their school cross country, and they got up that morning, 6 a.m. was an early one, and they came out to me, and Minty, who's eight, said, it's cross country today, but I'm not sporty, so I'm not doing it. And then Holiday comes out, bed hair and what, you know, real sleepy, and she's like, what's going on? Oh, darling, it's cross country today. Oh, I'm not doing that. No. So I'm having breakfast with them and the discussion goes on and I'm kind of like, well, you know, it doesn't sound like that much fun to me either. I'm not super like pushing them to do it. Then Shane comes out. Now, Shane, who you saw before, Shane loves sport, loves it, big into things like this. So he hears the discussion. He's like, what's going on? And the girls are like, we're not doing cross country. Don't love it. Not a sporting. No. He's like, oh, no. We are cross country people. We are a sporting family. We get in the game. We are participators. And the girls are like, awesome. And I'm like, yeah, we are. We absolutely are. Jumping ship really quick onto his team, for sure. We love cross country. So the morning goes on and the girls, you know, gradually realise they're not going to win this one. And so they come around and Minty, who is the older one, she's quite determined. Once she's changed her mind, she's good to go. So she laces up her boots and they go to school. The thing that gets them there, though, is that Shane, in this conversation, has told them that he will be there. He is coming to watch the cross country. So the girls are excited all of a sudden for this, for their big race. The thing that gets them to the starting line is that their dad, who loves them, is going to be watching. So off they go. Minty runs first. Like I said, once she's made up her mind, she's good. She belts around the course, comes in, everyone's cheering. It's awesome. She does great. She's really happy. Knows she's done her best. Holiday, who's six, as it turns out, is pretty good at the cross country. Gets that from her father, not from me. So she takes off around the course and the course goes kind of through the school. They just sort of run with their little classmates. And then she comes around to the part of the field where all the families are waiting and cheering. And Shane is there and he's cheering her on. And she comes around and she's like coming a good third. Like, yeah, girl. So she's coming in strong, but then all of a sudden she sees people watching her and she totally loses it. She melts down, tears, race over, on the ground, in the middle of the course, done. There is no more racing for Holiday. The kids all run past her and she's in tears, devastated. At this point, Shane is standing on the sidelines. He's been cheering for her, saying, you can do it, you're awesome, you've got this. And now he has a choice. Now, is he this scary judgy guy? Does he yell at her and say, get up? What are you doing? Remember the techniques we talked about. Does he write her a gym plan and say, come on in to Good Life Gym and we'll train you better? Does he talk about her technique and how she should have been more focused? Maybe she should have worn stretchy pants. No, he doesn't. He is a loving father. And so he jumps over the barrier with Florence, the three-year-old, attached to his leg. So he's, you know, hobbles over to her and he scoops Holiday up in his arms and he finishes the race with her huddled in his chest safely. I feel like this story reminds me of how God is. He wants us to know that he is watching in close, not just because the fear of being accountable should help us to do better, and it absolutely should. I know it does for me. But because if we believe he is a good, loving master, we want to race well. We want to be faithful with the work he has trusted us with, because we know he's cheering for us, he's carrying us, and he is with us. So maybe your life right now feels a little bit more like Tough Mudder than a primary school cross country. Maybe you feel like you're failing or you stuffed it. You're in meltdown phase and you can't get it back. I believe this evening that God wants to encourage us that you are not on your own. You are not on your own in your waiting. You're not on your own in your perseverance. He wants to scoop you up. We don't have to do it on our own. We don't have to do all these things on our own. He wants to help us with that. Looking at the truth, this truth this week in James has really impacted the three of us. This loving master who cares about us, who cares about the details of our lives, he is with us and he is for us. He is watching, and that really should compel us to do better. I was thinking also as the girls were speaking about these things that we might be waiting for and looking at life through this lens that I was talking about. You know, the word says that if we're to seek first his kingdom, all these other things will be added unto us. And I was talking to a lady this morning about this idea of the lens, that if we look at these problems and the perspective and of perseverance or the things that we're waiting through this lens, when we pull into focus, I don't know if you guys use old school cameras anymore or just phones, but I love cameras, and you have this, you know, this ring on your lens that you can pull things into focus, what you want to look at, what you want to focus on, and everything else sort of goes blurry. Yeah, not if you know what I'm talking about. It's for me, this picture of like pulling that kingdom, God's return into focus, filters out the things, it drops everything that shouldn't be in focus into blur. Does that make sense? Yeah. So we're going to take a couple of minutes now. If you have your journals with you, pull them out. If you have paper or your phone, we want to think about this. We want to challenge all of us to think about the season that you're in, whether you're in a season of patience, where you're waiting for something, where you're waiting for something in your life. Maybe have a look at it through that different lens. Maybe you're in a season of perseverance. And like Sarah said, you know when you're in that season where you're just sticking it out. Maybe you are melted down on the running track and you don't even know how to get to the next step, let alone the end. But we can trust God to scoop us up in that. So identify that right now. Write it down with whatever you have. Are you in a season of patience? Are you in a season of perseverance? And what are the things that need to be readjusted as you look through that lens, that Christ is returning? He is absolutely coming back. But he is also good. He is watching, but he is a good master. He is a loving master. Take a moment now, and then we'll come back together.
Don't forget that the most beautiful thing about the seasons is that they're always changing. And wherever you find yourself right now, it will change. It will pass. Remember what James said about if you're struggling, pray. And if you're happy, sing. Because life truly is a gift to those who persevere. If you feel like you would like someone to pray with you, then come on up. We'll be here, and we would be honored to pray with you. Otherwise, go well, and we'll see you later.